David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 299. I'm your host, Steve Raker, along with Whirlwind X, Kevin, and Andrew the LA Rabbit. What's going on, guys? Hello. Sorry for that unannounced extra skip week there, but it's summertime and things are happening, and we're going to do it again next month. After episode 300, before episode 301, to facilitate actually being able to record the shows before putting them out. That usually makes them better.
We'll just record a point one without you. It'll be a secret episode, like those secret Deadpool covers.
Anytime you guys want to try, I'm happy to include it. All right, tonight we have, as threatened for months now, we have the culmination of our Power Man and Iron Fist project, where we've gone back. We started way back years ago with the early Iron Fist appearances. I think we covered the Marvel Masterworks of Iron Fist that did his early publishing history. And then, was it last year? Or maybe even the year before that, we started doing... I think it might have been just last summer that we started doing Luke Cage. And have gone all the way through his series, where Iron Fist joined in and it became Power Man and Iron Fist. And the goal was to get all the way to issue 100 if we could. And here we are, with 100 within sight. We've got issues 93 to 100 to cover that originally ran from March to October of 1983.
Andrew even read the novel.
The novelization. And that was May, December, if you're looking at cover dates, but come on, I go by what when it came out on the stands. I was 13 years old. This was a lot of that year for me right here. Every issue was 60 cents, but issue 100 cost you a buck. What I like about this run of 93 to 100 particularly is that it's really just two storylines that are connected. I guess it's more reminiscent of... today's storytelling. If you had a chunk of issues, it's really only two stories, but they kind of scatter them a little, they interweave them a little bit, so it's kind of like 93, 94, and 96 are one story with involving the new Chemistro, and then 95, 97, 98, 99, and 100 are the big epic that new writer Kurt Busiek is trying to pull off here with Power Man and Iron Fist. So 93 and 94, and then the sequel will be in 96 here. We've got Kurt Busiek writing, and 93 is Dennis Cohen's last issue penciling, with Ricardo Villamonte providing the inks. What's happening here is that Luke he's losing his street credentials. The streets are starting to turn on him. Except for Blind Toby, of course, right?
Well, he's blind, so...
he can't check his credentials.
And Danny is acting like he's, like, lost without the backing of Kun Loon and knowing that Kun Loon is run by Master Khan, a maniac, and all that. And what I like about it is they're kind of going back and retalking about some of that Kun Loon stuff. And the guys meet the new Chemistro, who really, he bests Luke... and then during the retreat, he turns Colleen and Bob Diamond into glass. That's not good.
Yeah. How are you going to get out of that one? You don't want to start walking forward with your foot. Like, not good stuff.
Well, the other thing I enjoyed is a subplot is DW is recording the Heroes for Hire for his film project, but he does contemporaneous... narrating instead of,
yeah,
you know, narrating it in post. He's there in during the battles, like talking into the microphone, and I'm like, didn't anyone in his school tell him he can just do that stuff later? Like, he doesn't have to record it at the same time that he's watching it.
That was the early
any fancy computers.
Yeah, that was the early 80s for you, though. I mean, it's when we first started all getting access to, you know, having some sort of home camcordery kind of a thing or camera. And, yeah, we gave our smart alecky play-by-plays when we were recording a lot of things, too, you know. But, yeah, that was pretty good. I also liked when Luke is taking on Chemistro. The reason why he's taking him on alone is because Danny is taking on this whole crowd of thugs. And he just whoops them, and that's a pretty cool sequence. As I said, Cohen always choreographed a good fight scene, and Danny's moves particularly. And he'll be missed. Like I said, he's one of my top three fondly remembered long runs on these characters. Is Danny's Cohen along with Kerry Gamill, and it's hard not to add John Byrne to the mix because it's John Byrne, for crying out loud.
He's also not afraid to make Iron Fist pretty bulky and muscular, as opposed to some people who go on the leaner side.
And still makes him look flexible as far as the movement sequences, you know? Issue 94 is drawn by oncoming artist Ernie Chan, who we know mostly from his Conan work, and work for Across Town when he did stuff with the Joker and Batman stuff, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not familiar with those characters, Steve.
So, Power Man and Iron Fist, they decide to go ask Curtis, the original Chemistro, what the deal is. And they learn that the new Chemistro is his tougher brother. Chemistro lures Power Man and Iron Fist to the Port Authority for this 8-page epic showdown, after which Chemistro escapes through the street. But it's okay because Curtis restored Bob and Colleen, and then Danny's going to hook Curtis up with a job with Stark Industries or International at this time, but with Tony Stark.
Whoa, he's a regular, another character from the Distinguished Competition that used to do that.
Are you sure it wasn't Stain Industries at this time?
not yet. I like just when... There's a sequence early on in the book where just when Power Man and Iron Fist need to blow off some steam and crack some heads, they're like really bumming about Bob and Colleen, you know, potentially being dead, and they run into these old salts of the sea just in time to beat them up good, and you get to see Ernie Chan do what I think is some really nice Luke Cage faces. I really like how he does his bushy sideburns and almost gives him... at times, like a little bit of a islandy, like Philippine look to him at times. I don't know if it's through I don't know why I'm getting the vibe, if it's through the eyes or the, but it's a cool look for Cage. I like Chan's Cage.
I think the team does a great job with a lot of little moments. Mine, the one I liked was when they do the flashback, it's a 3-quarter page, and they do it in pseudo black and white with just yellow and blue tones. I think it looks pretty cool, like just having the two colors kind of as the only thing, and the rest are... But even the whites have like a little bit of a bluish tinge.
I like there's a scene where they're hanging out at Heroes for Hire, you know, in front of Jenny's desk, basically. And they're totally getting in her way, and they're trying to talk through what's been going on and plot what they're going to do next. And Jenny finally just tells them just to get up and go talk in their offices. In one of their offices, they're like, "We got offices?" And there's still sheets over the furniture because they've never moved into either of their offices.
They have fancy names on their doors, too.
What I like Busick is doing here, and there's a lot of... I mean, this shows that he's a new writer a lot throughout the... depth of some of the plots that we have going on. But what I like is something that we'll get used to him doing throughout his career, just better and better, is he really keeps the supporting cast in play and brings in a lot of old elements from the book. We've got Colleen, we've got Misty, Jenny, Jaren, you know, Bob, Lieutenant Scarf, etc. It's cool.
And Luke Cage ends up shirtless, so, you know, we're checking all the boxes.
I think this is the first time he's cracked out of his shirt, though, after Chemistro turns it to steal or something, as Cage says. There's also this ridiculous sequence, I thought, when Chemistro turns a hydrant water into granite, like in between him and Iron Fist, who's chasing him, and Danny, instead of just running around it, takes the time to, like, call forth the Iron Fist and punch it, even though it's a 6-inch wide obstacle. It's pretty funny. Also funny, too, is the letters page throughout many of these issues keeps referring to this controversy of, should we change Power Man and Iron Fist's costumes? And everyone's like, no, don't change the costumes.
Some people are rooting for the change, though, Steve. It's not unanimous. There are a few who want new costumes.
It'd take 10 years for Cage to get a new one, and Iron Fists would get red for a while. That was weird. Issue 95 also has Ernie Chan providing pencils and inks, and we get another example that it's pretty much been steady work for Heroes for Hire. Showing them on these little bit jobs gives a good opportunity to showcase their skills for the reader in the every issue of the Jim Shooter, you know, run Marvel must be someone's first issue, that kind of a thing. So you got to show their powers. So if they have them just like cleaning up a quick job or something, but at the same time, they're not just guarding, you know, they've come a long way from guarding the Fantastic Car at a car show.
And there's a video game highlight. I was guessing it was maybe Burger Time.
But Luke is unwanted by the arcade owner. Once he says something about the game, he's like, yeah, we, you know, what do we care what you think, Luke? It's showing more that the streets, now even not just the people on the streets, but even the shop owners and stuff that he used to protect and still does in his mind, are really starting to be apathetic towards him, if or downright rude. So he damages his property. Danny also, speaking of property, he buys a yacht.
Whoa, big money.
He's a fish out of water, though, you know? He's got Misty and Harmony and Colleen and Luke, and they're all, you know, a 3-hour tour. They're out there. Nobody's digging it except Harmony, basically. But while they're out on the water, they are lured by Danny's chi. It's so funny. He's got his hand up, and it just starts pulling them. I imagine it's like pulling the whole boat, you know? But they're lured by Danny's chi to this island where there's a wedding taking place, but the wedding has been raided by these commandos, and they are in search of this mysterious disco ball gem thing that has some sort of connection to Danny's chi.
Well, at least it wasn't a cult that was trying to siphon off his chi or something.
I also enjoy when he has the boat, he wears a little, like, captain's outfit. That's
he's trying to play the part.
And the boat's name is Misty, so that's a power move. If you want to impress your girl, you buy a yacht, name it after her.
You would think, but it all rings hollow for him. It's not working for him. It would work for Harmony. Issue 96 is Ernie Chan pencils with Mike Mignola inks. How about that, huh? Chemistro is back, and he turns some policemen, including Lieutenant Scarf's jackets, into burning phosphorus and burns them badly, hospitalizes them with burns. Luke comes in, and he's all like, the doctor hasn't been here, and this is a cruddy hospital, and who's the doctor? If I could give them a piece of my mind, it's Claire Temple's hospital. Dr. Claire! Oh, and she shuts him down. She waves that finger. Man.
It's also interesting for me to see Mignola over Chan, because I don't associate Mignola with this sort of story at all. So it's kind of interesting to see for me, especially because we just had the other Chan, you know, inking himself and everything. It really does look quite a bit different than the previous issue.
Absolutely. Chemistro is beating Power Man and Iron Fist handily. He has trained. He kind of is knowing their moves and has some things in mind for them. And he's giving them a money run for their money. So Luke and Danny enlist Curtis to spray them down with, like, this Teflon barrier. Hold your breath, boys. And the next encounter with Chemistro, our duo come out on top because now they got the shielding.
And there's some nonsense about some new Alpha Flight comic, Steve. Did that ever come out? I don't remember.
When you were talking earlier about the DW shooting footage for his film, his documentary film, I think it was for like a student film, if I'm not mistaken, right? He finally shows Power Man and Iron Fist some of the film, and the guys, or at least Luke, digs it, and it made me think of, although I couldn't, I tried to flip back through one of the old Epic collections, and I couldn't find what issue it was, but remember back when Jaren had, like, a promo commercial of Power Man and Iron Fist, with footage, and Cage did not like it at all. He might have even broke the desk. It's funny, the difference here when DW did it. He's like, no, actually, you captured the essence of us here.
Well, that's because DW knows Luke, you know? He's been with him for... He's the longest side character. What do we call supporting cast, sidekick.
Yeah, it's true.
Whatever we're calling him.
Yeah, yeah. There's also a two-page sequence with Luke and Danny chatting about what drives them to keep doing what they do and how Danny is, again, he's lost without Kunlun and feels unfulfilled, whereas Luke says he's always feeling satisfied because he's got his people, you know, the Times Square neighborhood. And with the whole time they're having this conversation, Danny's holding that disco ball gem like he's Gollum with the ring, is like with his precious, you know. And how he's got the gem, he bought the gem. He's got the connection, he's got the money. Maybe he gave him the yacht, traded the yacht.
Hey, there's a look, he should be enjoying all this stuff. Like, he's got the money, what's he gonna do with it, you know? Give it to poor people? That doesn't sound very proper.
In the end conflict with Chemistro, when they do finally come out on top, the people of Times Square turn on Luke and Danny and hold Iron Fist back to force Luke to face Chemistro alone. Luke bests Chemistro and then says, you know what? Forget, after the whole talk earlier about, like, you're the reason that I do this and everything, you people would drive me, forget it. You just lost your champion. I'm out of Times Square. I'm leaving.
Goodbye. No more Western movies, right? That's the end of the Gem Theater.
Yeah, I guess he's moving back to Chicago.
Issue 97 is also Ernie Chan, Mike Mignola.
I really like this one, man. Now it's starting to really heat. You can feel like the beat of it getting to an anniversary issue now. Oh. Feels like it's speeding up a little.
And I was buying it off the stands. I agree.
Is that Fierro from X-Force?
Years before.
Yeah, Descendant.
This is before there was a gajillion Feral characters all over the place. So this whole issue of 97 is really scenes that are built around this framing sequence of Luke packing up and leaving his apartment over the gem in Times Square, or his apartment office slash office, whatever you want to call it, his space. Danny understands. DW and even a surprising visit from Claire Temple can't really talk him out of it. Of course, Harmony thinks it's a great idea, him leaving, you know, and moving uptown with Danny. Fantastic idea, she thinks.
Oh, those people on the street are pretty nasty.
But in the end, Luke has a change of heart when he takes a final stroll around the hood and helps an old woman from, like, a pack of predators, and he calls up DW and he's asks him if he has any space for rent.
And while I like the art team a lot, as I've said, in this one, for some reason, they make Iron Fist look like he's in his mid-30s. I don't know if it's the outfit, but his face just has this real older... Maybe it's that gem is, like, artificially aging him. But I love when Colleen and Misty come by and convince him to wear roller skates, so you get to see him beat people up in roller skates.
That's great. First, He's a little wobbly, and then he gets the hang of it, and he starts, like, you know, doing flips and stuff. And then Misty almost breaks his leg. She pushes him over a park bench. Like, that was a good way to take a hero out for, like, 6 to 8 weeks. You know what I mean?
Oh, he grew up in Kunlun. That's how they used to beat each other up for fun back then.
When they do go out on the skates and they come back to Danny's apartment and it's being raided by those same commandos that were after the gem on that island. Now they're after the gem in his apartment. He does this cool move swinging from the door jam where he kicks off the skates and uses them as projectiles. And under the skates are his little yellow booties.
They couldn't work some kind of dazzler cross or reference with all this roller skating fighting in.
Earlier in the issue, too, you see those commandos again. They're armed with these little laser pistols, and they're getting orders from at this point, you just know that he's a glasses-wearing, you know, suited executive type who serves another master, and that they're going to set out and raid Danny's apartment for the gem. And their wild card is this Fera, this gray wolf woman who, I mean, she'll just tear your throat out. She demonstrates that. She's just like, I'll tear your throat out. And she just turns to some guy and tears his throat out. It's like, okay. Cool. All right there.
It's that alpha dog thing. You know, the first day in prison, you got to establish who's running this show.
At the apartment, when they are fending off the commandos trying to rob Danny of his disco ball, Iron Fist encounters Fera. And she wigs him out with her knowledge of Kunlun and saying that she's like an evolved wolf woman, but she was one of the pack of wolves that ate his mother. And not just one of the pack of wolves, but the first one that got to her and all this stuff. And that throws him off, and he has to fight her. Finally, the fist, calling forth the power of the fist, plus Misty and Colleen showing up, make Fera flee. But she gets the disco ball gem thing and takes off.
I have a feeling it was more of the power of the Iron Fist. I mean, I love Colleen and Misty too, but I don't think Fera is that afraid of them.
Issue 98 is Ernie Chan and Andy Muschinski. Old Nemesis's Shades and Comanche show up. How about that? Remember those guys? They've been there as long as, you know, as long as DW. They were all the way back in Seagate.
Oh, those are some costumes.
They show up and surprise Luke by easily besting him because they've been upgraded with their equipment. And they now have, like, projectile. They're both distance fighters.
What is he, Cyclops?
Yeah, basically. And we also
Cyclops and Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Oh.
With better lingo. We learn that Ward Meacham is behind the commandos. He was the suit. And that he serves this secret master. Danny discovers one of the commando's laser guns at Rand Meacham's headquarters and suspects the connection going on there. Something's going on with Rand Meacham. Because, you know, Meacham was his father's business partner and that killed his father and basically in turn killed his mother and trapped Danny and Kunlun. He came back, left Kunlun to kill Meacham, but Meacham was killed by Master Khan's ninja, and now Ward Meacham with Joy Meacham run Rand Meacham Industries because Danny isn't much of a businessman. He's a heck of a roller skater, but he's not much of a businessman. Huh. So DW, while he's filming Power Man and Iron Fist, he accidentally films Ward Meacham paying Shades and Comanche. Power Man and Iron Fist engage Shades and Comanche, and they fight for like 7 pages. At the end of which, Shades and Comanche are arrested, but like while they're being pushed into the back of the police car, Shades turns and does his optic blast right at Power Man and Iron Fist and blasts them off a giant bridge they're on.
He just killed Power Man and Iron Fist.
Right.
The next issue, splat.
Yeah. Also in issue 98, Jaren, he suggests that Heroes for Hire hire Misty and Colleen to snoop around at Rand Meacham, which is a good way to sort of keep them in the loop of the adventure and stuff while Power Man and Iron Fist go after Shades and Comanche so that both angles are being covered.
I like how Colleen's shining her giant sword there.
Hmm.
Also like how it looks more like one of those Middle Eastern swords,
you know, exactly.
Than the katana that, but I'm sure she's got like 100 swords. Like, let's be honest.
Isn't
there's
it like
a woman
guns?
That knows
like,
swords?
Yeah, you would have a lot of swords.
Also, Luke has lunch with Harmony, and she's trying to pull some like chick fu mind game manipulation thing on him. She's gonna excuse herself to go to the bathroom and let him, you know, get his apology ready for her so she can, you know, mold him into the man she wants him to be. And while she's in the powder room, he just decides to ditch her there at lunch and splits.
He doesn't go crawling to any woman, Steve.
No.
I thought you would have learned that by now.
It's because he ran into Claire at the hospital and she told him off and he started comparing women like that with women like Harmony. So, issue 99 is also Ernie Chan and Andy Muschinski. They're falling from the bridge, right? Oh no.
100, it becomes Nightwing Restorations, the comic book.
Yes. Yeah, 101 practically is anyway, as it was. But in 99, they open with them falling from the bridge and towards the water in the river. Luke shields Danny from the water when they hit, but Luke is knocked unconscious, and Danny has to rescue him from drowning and give him CPR, which means that Luke was dead, because dead people get CPR. Misty and Colleen, meanwhile, on their side mission, they're spying on the Rand Meacham commandos, having a meeting, and they observe El Aguila, the eagle. He's fighting his way through them.
I also like that Misty and Colleen, they just wear kind of their battle clothes, but they don't have, like, superhero outfits or nothing.
Nah.
They're just two private eyes.
So they decide to join in and help the eagle and help him escape. But Farrah appears and captures Misty. Oh, no.
Puts her in a headlock.
Lieutenant Scarf tells Power Man and Iron Fist that Shades and Comanche were sprung free after they were arrested. And now DW is missing after the gem was ransacked in search of this film.
But they grabbed the wrong film.
Yep.
Or maybe it's the right film if you're a fan of Westerns. I mean, it doesn't handle the evidence of Meacham, but, you know, it's kind of cool.
Colleen and El Aguila arrive right at that time and add that Misty was captured by Farrah. And then Farrah shows up and spends like 6 pages fighting her way through them looking for that darn film. She can't find it and she escapes again. Luke, however, he knows where the right film is and they decide to check it out, and now they see the evidence of the Ward Meacham connection. Oh, and the disco ball? The disco ball brings Master Khan from Kunlun to Earth. Like, show enough, he shows up.
So he was a fan of disco.
It's 1983, but it had been a while since he had been on Earth. So when he was last on Earth, there still was healthy disco.
Yeah, he was just like, I need some more of that.
Yep, instead of the Bee Gees, now it's one of the Bee Gees, like, singing with Barbara Streisand. With that, are you guys ready for issue 100? It's come to this.
Oh, this has a good cover.
Yeah, it does have. The art team is Ernie Chan and Mike Mignola, but it is a painted Ernie Chan cover, which is, I always like to see Ernie Chan's painted stuff. It's no Bob Larkin painted cover, like the cover to issue 75, but it was reminiscent of that and let you know that, yes, this is our sequel to it, and this is what we do in this here comic. And it's the last issue of the Chan Mignola team, or either of them individually, even, on the book. All right, so issue 100, Power Man, Iron Fist, Jenny, and Jaren are going over the events of the last few issues and days for our benefit and theirs. And they get interrupted by a courier, like a little speedy delivery from Mr. McFeely. And the package...
Looks a little younger than Mr. McFeely.
Mr. McFeely was actually young under there, I think. But anyway, the package contains the disco ball gem.
What?
And reminiscent of X-Men Annual 4, the Nightcrawler's Inferno, that's like one of my favorite X-Men stories from 1980, which would have been 3 years before this, the gem draws out Danny's soul from him, sucks the soul out of him, and then flies out the window.
Triggering a flashback sequence.
Yes. While he's over the 2 pages that he's unconscious, we get Iron Fist's origin story retold. And when he's...
You actually see his origin.
When he's awake, he's in the hospital with Luke and Dr. Claire at his side. And she reports that he is weakening, degenerating at a cellular level. And at this rate, he'll be dead in 24 hours.
Ooh, that's not going to be good.
No, they got to get his mojo back, basically.
I was kind of bummed out they left UT out of his origin. I mean, they include Lee, Kong, and all those guys, but no time for UT.
Well, you've got the, Etu UT, right? but with Master Khan being established as the big bad, it's hard to establish, you know, it's hard to spend any real estate establishing, like, the second-in-command mediary, you know what I mean? Intermediary bad guy.
He's the august personage in Jade. That's his official title.
True that. So Harmony shows up and grows up. Instead of giving Cage some kind of jibber jabber about being alongside Claire again, she appropriately offers her emotional support, and I thought that was a pretty cool development for her character there. Showing that who learned the lesson at that lunch, you know what I mean, with the mind trick stuff. Well, Danny's soul in the disco ball reaches that Kun Loon-looking retreat that Luke and Danny saw last installment and lands in the hands of Master Khan, who's, like, bossing around Meacham in front of Shades, Comanche, and Pharah. Also, Misty and DW are imprisoned in cells elsewhere inside the complex. So Luke and Danny, and this is, again, I reading this monthly as a 13-year-old, really did feel like it was building up to something because I had read all those issues before, at least the Power Man and Iron Fist ones from 50 to 75 and beyond. And man, I just was a real sucker for Iron Fist history stuff. And it was felt like a lot was coming to a culmination here as far as having to address Master Khan again after 25 issues. So Luke and Danny, who's now confined to a wheelchair, rally their available troops. They've got Lieutenant Scarf. She's my partner. I'm not, you know, I'm going with you. They've got Ella Guila, and they've got the Daughters of the Dragon, Colleen and Bob Diamond.
I don't know if Bob is a daughter of the dragon. I mean, I agree. He has a glass jaw, Steve. Hey-o.
Power Man's origin then gets retold over 2.5 pages, but it includes meeting Iron Fist and how it led to him finally beating the rap that originally got him locked up in Seagate Prison with Shades and Comanche. So anyway, he feels like he owes the Fist, you know?
I do like the when the equipment explodes, pieces of metal strategically cover certain body parts that Marvel does not want.
And then he grabs some clothes before he breaks out of the prison.
So our gang and their supporting cast here invade the compound. Iron Fist, fortunately, is getting stronger the closer he gets to his disco soul gem of chi and starts being more helpful in the fight. He can get up out of the chair and stuff. Misty, meanwhile, uses her bionic arm to free herself and DW so that they can join in on the melee.
Yeah, she didn't need to bother freeing DW, personally, but you can just leave him in jail till after it's all over anyway.
She should have for his own... Yeah, see, that's it. He's definitely going to get an A for this project.
Yeah, instead of helping them in a meaningful way, I'm glad he's caring about himself so much.
But there are lots of commandos to fight here and show our gang fighting off. The supporting cast fend off the commandos while Luke and Danny split off in different directions. And over the next 5 pages, Luke faces Shades and Comanche, which is tough, but he eventually brings the roof down on him. And Danny faces Pharah. But instead of locking horns, she really wants to fight a restored Iron Fist. And she says she's got no love for Master Khan. She's forced to serve him. So she leads him to the disco ball gem so that he can get his chi back and then she can, you know, fight him fair.
I always love those deals with coerced people where they stick to the letter of the agreement and they got to think of some clever. So her clever thing is because he's so weak, she was ordered to kill the Iron Fist, but he's not really the Iron Fist.
And I'm yeah.
Like, oh, that's like those genies when you get the wishes. Although I'm still willing to take a crack at it if there are any genies that want to give me 3 wishes.
I think you've been thinking about this. Genies beware. So Master Khan is there trying to suck Danny's soul out of the gem, and Danny's on hand trying to suck his soul back from the gem. So there's like two pages of them going back and forth, like, no, now the bubblegum glob of Danny's soul is going this way, and now it's going that way, and Danny starts getting all skeletal and stuff, and he's, no, now it's getting closer, now he's getting restored, and it's pretty cool the way it's depicted.
Yes, although I wouldn't have minded. All that bubblegum did remind me of Thunderbolts. Like, where's Wonder Man? Where's Atlas?
Luke then busts in, but Master Khan, he throws Ragador's rings on him to hold him. With a little touch of the Flames of Faultin, just to...
Whoa, I think we know another guy who uses stuff like that.
Problem, though, Khan can't absorb the dragon's soul and hold Luke at bay with the rings and the flames. He had to throw in the flames, right? So Pharah leaps in, takes the moment, and steals the amulet that Khan wore around his neck that he uses to control her. And now she can go on to appear like almost 10 years later in a Captain America story where they needed a bunch of female villains during Gruenwald's run, like the Superior or Suprema or something like that. Strategy, something like that. Luke, taking the moment when Khan is thrown off by Pharah's leap, puts Khan in a bear hold, and Danny takes the opportunity to destroy the disco ball gem.
Oh, no more disco. He's ready to get into his heavy metal phase, I guess.
It's my favorite move, Steve, the double-fisted.
Yeah, it's tough on that bottom pinky. The bottom pinky takes a lot of the force. But anyway, it sends Khan back to Kunlun. His connection to Earth has been broken, and it restores Danny's soul, chi, and mojo in that order. Misty turns up with Ward Meacham, and Scarf has him arrested with Joy Meacham's blessing, which ends the Rand Meacham bad blood feud for good. The end. Boom. Now, I couldn't wait for the next issue. Get some fallout, right? Busick does stick around another, I want to say about a half a dozen issues or so. And then there, Archie Goodwin does a couple of issues. And another writer whose name I'm forgetting because I don't think he went on to do anything else, at least with Marvel. And then Jim Owsley takes over to do his run on the book, which I think he takes it all the way to the end where there's the stuff with the FBI agent and the super kid and Danny with the red costume and Danny's death and all that stuff, which gives a big sigh. Someday when I'm really dying to come back to this material, maybe we'll revisit that stuff. But it's right now, at least, this is a better ending. Because issue 101 and 102, 103, 104, even though Busick was writing it, there was no reference to any of this stuff. Issue 101 has Danny in a coma, and it's essentially a Misty Colleen story. It might as well have been a fill-in. It was written by Busick along with the artist on that issue, Rich Howell, who we know from the Vision Scarlet Witch stuff that he did and other stuff. But there's no mention of Kunlun. There's no mention of the events of issue 100. There's no fallout. There's no anything. So it's like this is really the end of the book in a lot of ways. It becomes a new title after it meanders for about six or seven issues.
Well, who would have thought we'd make it here when we started on Iron Fist oh so many years ago?
It's funny that I had remembered fondly the gathering of the supporting cast to go try to save Danny's soul and everything like that. But I forgot they were just going at the fortune cookie factory and it wasn't actually Kunlun. The way I had remembered it was like that they had went on their assault and visited Kunlun again. But no, it was just the place and the Catskills.
I was looking forward to them traveling dimensions and all that stuff. And then I'm like,
yeah, sorry.
I guess we're not getting there.
No. But again, it closed the big chapter. It had Khan, it had Shades and Comanche, it brought a lot of the old supporting cast back, the Eagle there, and Chemistro even on the run-up. Again, it was very Busick-y in that respect.
Yeah, just no Pop Machine.
Right.
Although he beat up a video game machine, is that...
Well, yeah, that is true.
So what did you guys think of Power Man and Iron Fist? Did it live up to the memories of it being a nostalgic, fun buddy book to you, Andrew? And then to you, Kevin, did it live up to its reputation?
For me, I was forgot how many threads were in it. I have a memory of this being a lot more like one and done, two and done, three and done, and I guess I had forgotten that they really do have kind of seeds that they've planted and then kind of grow slowly over a period of time, so they're able to kind of go back to things and revisit in a way. I mean, I really liked the book. I didn't have much of a memory of it, but I do remember, you know, I had a subscription to it and everything else, and I just, like I said, to me, it was in the back of my head, like it was, oh yeah, just, you know, fun little one here, the two there.
How about you, Kevin? How did it hold up as far as living up to its reputation?
It's kind of uneven, really. Like, usually I have more love for these books. Like, it wasn't, like, terrible by any stretch. And, like, you see Camistro show up and all these kind of guys. Like, that's always fun. I guess it's kind of like with the supporting cast or whatever, like once they show up, like it's more exciting, but sometimes they come and go.
The fractured consistency of being able to have a writer stay on the book for a long time, other than Mary Jo Duffy, I think really affected the book. I mean, right from the beginning, you know, right from it being Luke Cage, Power Man number one, or Hero for Hire number one, I should say.
It's like a modern book. It can't keep a creative team.
Yeah, right. So many good art teams, though, that I really remember fondly. It was really fun to revisit that stuff. Just what I was hoping for, and now I feel like I'm all remember all my Power Man and Iron Fist history and who all those characters were, which was great, especially when they did the recent series this past couple of years here, the David Walker, Sanford Green stuff, where they brought back so many of those old characters. I mean, how cool was it to know who, you know, Cockroach Hamilton was, and Black Mariah, and Mr. Fish, and Piranha Jones, and Cornwell Cottonmouth, and heck, even Jenny, who was the first big bad, right?
Yeah, I would almost say that some of the Luke Cage stuff I enjoyed more than some of the later stuff. It's just weird. Like, I don't know, maybe I was expecting more, like, outer dimensional, crazy stuff. I don't know. It's good, though.
Actually, I read the last arc of the Power Man and Iron Fist series, the 10 through 15 of 15, the Harlem Burns arc. And I love the idea of a Harlem, like, gang war of all these low-level gangsters.
Gang wars are, like, my thing. It seems like from very early, like the Kingpin and the Rose and Silvermane, and then digging, like, through back issues to find more of that type of stuff. So, yeah, I think I'm predisposed to like some of that stuff, and which is why I'm probably checking out Defenders now too.
This one had
the Kingpin and the Rose do, because for me that always reminds me of the comic book podcasting situation. Because at some point it's going to be the Deliberate Noise Network against the Taylor Network. I know it. We're the Kingpin. They're the Rose. Or are we the Rose and they the Kingpin? Who's the owl?
Who's the owl? Who's Silvermane?
But Daryl does a show on this network. With Mike.
He's a mole. I'm convinced.
Yeah, that's right.
He's underground, Steve.
But I felt like that last arc, there's things that I really liked about that book, but at the same time, I felt like there were too many players to really get that solid Power Man and Iron Fist characterization stuff going good. I mean, they had their moments, but there was just a lot of players to keep track of, because there was also, I mean, there were all those guys that we just mentioned, but there's also the Black Cat, and the two main baddies end up being Tombstone and Alex Wilder from The Runaways.
Yeah, that to me, it probably doesn't mean that much to you, Steve, but the Runaways thing, I'm like, that was huge.
Cool.
Tombstone was always fun too.
Yeah. And then I like how some of those guys, they're not just guys in suits, like Tombstone or whoever, like they figured out how to make them more interesting.
Well, not just that, but Tombstone was pretty creepy. I mean, maybe it was a different era, but he was legitimately unsettling with his hold over Robbie.
Yeah.
I found that a very powerful storyline, how Robbie was completely within his sway.
Yeah, and my only complaint really about the book visually, I really like the book overall, but the color palette is really muted so many times. A lot of lavenders mixed into the palette that I like more contrast. But I really like the way that both Danny and Luke were depicted physically and stuff. And like I said, there were some good character moments in there. I felt like Walker had a better handle on Cage than the Fist, which is interesting because he goes on to write Cage's solo book.
Yeah.
And like you said, Defenders... You read the first couple issues?
Yeah.
I had
to check that out. And I guess there's always things where you're like, I hope this resolves well, right? With a certain character that shows up there.
Well, I mean, I should say, too, it's Bendis and David Marquez. And it's got Daredevil, Iron Fist, Luke, and Jessica all being attacked simultaneously by the new old baddie on the streets. Have you read it, Andrew?
No.
Because this has Diamondback coming back, Stryker, Willis Stryker, way back again from Cage, you know, Luke Cage number one. Part of me is like, oy vey, but the other part is like, I kind of gotten soft into this by all of those other guys who I thought was dead coming back in the other books, so.
Does this not remind you, in a way, of the first Daredevil arc that Bendis did, where
yes,
Silk's like, I'm going to show you how I would run it. Why are you letting this happen? This is what should go on. I'm going to get rid of the Kingpin and blah, 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 blah. And then you find out why you can't do it the new way.
I really liked there's a scene of Iron Fist, Danny Rand, going to a hoity-toity cocktail dinner type thing where the Kingpin is there. And he has a confrontation with him out of costume that is really clever and well done and awesome.
Yeah, got to go to those type of dudes, and he has a lot of money, so you know he should be going to some of those.
Kingpin's like, I never see you at these, and he's like, I hate going to these. I'm just here to bother you. And since we're on the Iron Fist Power Man finale, trying to get it all in, I'll say that I also read the new Luke Cage and Iron Fist titles to date. Luke Cage has two issues out. It's by David Walker and Nelson Blake II, who has a clean, really clean style. I remember him from Top Cow stuff in the past that he did with like Ron Mars.
Wow. Doesn't look like a... Like, he doesn't have a lot of that Top Cow...
No, his style...
...associate with that.
He didn't then either, but his style has developed. He's got a thinner line, which leaves more room for the colorist, and the coloring is, I think, exceptional on this book. I'm very much digging this one, this Cage book. There's two issues out, and Dr. Noah Bernstein, he dies. It's a suicide.
What?
And there are these gangsters that want this formula for this medicine that Bernstein has synthesized that keeps all of the other subjects that he's gone on to try to make like Luke Cage from becoming these aggressive, insane people. Like, do you remember Warhawk, the old Claremont character?
Oh, yeah.
So they're all, there's a whole bunch of others like them, and they're all going insane unless they get this treatment, and the mobster's son is one of them. So now with Bernstein out of the way, he kidnaps Noah's assistant, who doesn't know anything about chemistry, and Cage encounters these weapons that can cut him, and secrets about Bernstein's research stuff, and then it's like, wait, maybe Bernstein was actually murdered, and Warhawk even shows up. And he's nuts, but he's helping Cage. Cage is trying to get as much information as he can out of him, so it's slowly becoming more clear to him, but it's hard to get the information straight because it's coming from Crazy Warhawk. It's very good. It's getting good.
You know what I stalled out on after two issues, which...
What?
Which was I guess, less good, was Iron Fist.
No way.
Yeah.
It was even better, I thought. This was the best Iron Fist story since the Cary Andrews one, which I guess isn't that long ago.
Well, was there any in between?
Yeah, all of the David Walker stuff.
Oh, well, I put the Walker stuff above then. I'm more in tune with the Walker stuff. Like, I was hoping that he would be writing Defenders, honestly. But, you know, he's writing Luke Cage, so I can't really complain.
The Fist book, the first five issues, is one arc. And it's written by Ed Brisson with art by Mike Perkins. And it's an homage to the Brubaker Fraction Seven Cities arc.
Yeah, that was weird.
No, it's not. It gets good.
I think the first issue isn't the best sampler either. Like,
agreed.
Oh, I can't use my powers. I'm not in costume and everything. And you're like, are we really going down this road?
I read all five at once, so I have it. I had a different experience. Andrew told us about the first issue or two, I think, in past episodes. But Danny lost his mojo. Kun Loon is in ruins after the Cary Andrews thing. He's lost and he smells bad, like you said, Kevin. He gets a call for adventure from these dwellers of a hidden island that's populated by ex-citizens of Kun Loon who fled the city over UT's garbage. And they set up this new society.
Sanitation services?
And they set up this new society, right? And they're seven factions molded after the seven heavenly mystical cities.
And you know who one of those is.
Yes, I do. They set Danny up to compete against each of their champions, just like the Seven Cities tournament. And the reason is it's so that their city becomes legitimate and can replace fallen Kun Loon amongst the real seven heavenly cities. Isn't that cool? They're like trying to legitimize themselves and become the new Kun Loon by beating one of the champions with... They're hoping one of their seven champions can do the job. Through this backdrop, we get some more of Kun Loon's history that actually is done well for those who like the continuity stuff. It doesn't spit in the face of anything. And Iron Fist faces the champions of the houses of the eel, the bull, the rat, the bear, the snake.
The rabbit?
Yes, and the wolf. Rabbit. And Andrew, I'm not just saying this. But the rabbit was the coolest one.
For sure. And it's weird. In the version I remember, he wins.
Well, first he's like a benefactor. He like nurses Iron Fist back to health. It's kind of like Farrah. He wants to face Iron Fist at full strength. He's like helping him and he's giving him information and he's helping him heal from his previous battle against the rat guy where he got all poisoned. And then Iron Fist says, no, I gotta go now. And he's like, all right, then put up your dukes. And Iron Fist is like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, I'm your next opponent. And it's like, oh, man. Really cool. And then the wolf has some really amazing connections to Kun Loon, too, and the old history and everything. And it was really good, Kevin. Really good.
I can always cycle back.
Yes. It'll be on, Marvel.
Limited.
Exactly.
Point.
Oh, it'll probably be a thing where I'll be at a con and I'll be like, oh, there's those issues.
How dare you suggest that recent Marvel comics end up in the 25-cent bin?
These were good.
All their bin.
I also read, as just a quick mention here, the Jendi Tartakovsky Cage 4-issue limited series from this past year. This was cool. Heroes fighting animal hybrids in an arena of death. And by heroes, I mean Cage, Misty, Iron Fist, Brother Voodoo, Dazzler, and Ghost Rider. Come on. It's cool.
It has some serious X-Men continuity in there.
Yes, there's a Cyclops scene that's hilarious. Mace appears, right? Remember Mace? There are some really cool homages to 70s comics, too. There's some psychedelic homages in issue 2 and this one page that's like a Basil Wolverton homage that's really cool. Then, even better, in issue 1 they do a takeoff on the Jack Davis Spalding basketball ad that was on the back of all the comics. It's so cool. Cage comes through and acts the part of Rick Barry and Dr. J. It's so, and the kids that Tartakovsky draws, he does it with total Jack Davis style, so you really know you're looking at that ad. Very, very fun read. All right, that's just about all the Power Man and Iron Fist I can
fit to
store. Exactly.
One title I have kept with, and you'll be happy with this, Steve. I'm all current on Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, how are you liking Dugan's run?
I don't know. I'm still filling it out. And then I'm like, well, how long do you have to fill something out, right?
How about compared to the Bendis run?
Yeah, better than the Bendis run.
Yeah, so my son and I... And we'll get into it in the future when all of us have seen it, but like my son and I saw Spider-Man Homecoming, right? And we liked it very much, but there were some things that we nitpicked about. But last night we watched the old Spider-Man 3 with the Venom and Sandman thing, right? And we were just talking about some of the Spider-Man cliches of like how Spider-Man always has to fight the last battle with his mask off, you know, to service the actor's face and all that sort of stuff, and how the villain always has to have a personal relationship to Peter Parker somehow, some sort of personal connection, and how they can't get away from that cliche and they just keep reinforcing it. But when we finished watching Spider-Man 3 last night, my son turns to me and he says, you know, I like Spider-Man Homecoming a whole lot better right now.
It was so bad, I had actually forgotten they did a second one with Andrew Garfield.
Wow.
I still haven't seen that one. I still haven't seen the one with Electro yet.
It's not good at all, if I remember correctly. I mean, once I was reminded, I was like, oh, that's right. Because it's hard to believe Jamie Foxx, who's like a good actor, really turns in a something else in his performance. Yeah, it's not good. Do not hunt that down in lieu of seeing Spider-Man Homecoming. I would suggest listeners go see Spider-Man Homecoming.
But I wasn't trying to derail you on the Guardians thing. Just pointing out that sometimes you gotta say, well, it might not be the best, but it's way better than what we had before.
I was the guy behind the guy that was behind the guy. Murdered your uncle. Wait, what?
No doubt.
That's always my favorite.
Kills me.
But anyways, these Guardians issues, right, Steve?
Right.
No, I wasn't going to pick up issue 5 because I was like, oh, maybe I can just wait until the issue 6, the next arc. But then I noticed Somni was doing the artwork for issue 5. So I'm like, well, I got to at least check that out. It seems like they have like issues that are like by a totally different awesome artist in between like the regular story. It was like, I like the concept in number 5 where I you know, he has those like awesome mixtapes, but they always seem to have one type of music in like the movies, and I always thought, oh, it would be cool if one of them was like a heavy metal tape and one of them's like a pop tape, one of them's a rap tape, like that type of thing instead. Like they don't really get into that in the movie. Like they sort of stick to their soundtrack and everything.
Well, it's the one tape that he had from his mother. But now he's got an iPod. Well, now he's got an iPod.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Maybe, like, I don't know how much, like, cross-continuity, but there's a double-page spread in there where they show you, like, all these different tapes, and it's more like what I was thinking, not what the movie was presenting. And they sort of go into that. Like, there's a neat takeoff of, like, some of that stuff that I thought was neat. But there's some weird thing with like a Nova in that issue. So like the Novas are coming up again in the issue 6. So I'm like, whatever weirdness, I'm sure they'll
Well,
like, deal more with.
I like
that stuff.
I like Dugan's handling of the Nova stuff when he was writing that book, so I don't know.
Yeah. But another funny thing is I read issue 4 before issue 3. But the story from 2 continues into 4. So I had no idea that I had missed the issue.
Hilarious. Funny.
So, like, with 2 and 4, I'm like, after reading 4, I was just like, I don't know, this is all right. But then I read 3, and I liked 3 better. But it was, like, a Gamora, like, weird solo story with some of her dealing with some stuff. That's, I think it was Fraser Irving was the artist. And, you know, he does sometimes wacky visuals in different colors and purples. Yeah. And yeah, so I was like, wow, this is pretty good. So, you know, I'm sort of like, I'm sticking there, but I'm like, I don't know. Like, there's definitely a story developing. It's not like there's no subplots or anything. Like, they have some stuff going on with Groot and everything. So, like, all the ingredients are there. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how to feel exactly.
Well, it's just, we'll see. I guess we'll see, because it's not the end of the first arc, right? Or it still only has been one arc?
Yeah, I guess it was the 3 issues and then the 2 solo issues. Like, it doesn't seem like it's... You can't cut them apart easily. Like, it's kind of jumping all over the place. Which is fine, because why write just, like, a 5-issue arc or whatever? Like, so that's what I always said. Like, if your trade is 5 or 6 issues, like, you can position that any way you want.
Have you looked at the recent previews, the collected editions?
I don't remember anything that...
Andrew, was it...
Super exciting for that one.
Was it you, Andrew, who was questioning whether Marvel Masterworks still existed?
Yes.
Yeah. They still pump out 2 every 2 hardcovers every month. And
yeah, they're not like the archives. Yeah, the essentials might have went away, but the Masterworks are full steam ahead.
The soft covered Masterworks went away.
Yeah.
But the hard because they're doing another Submariner Volume 8 that has the end of the Bill Everett stuff when he made his comeback.
I wonder, like, if they're even thinking about, like, doing a number 9 anytime soon.
I don't think there is a number 9. Yeah. This one goes up to 70, issue 71. I think that goes right to the end of the title.
Yeah, like, if they wanted to close that line, like, they could.
Yeah, well, there is no, I mean, after that, it's the burn.
Yeah.
Unless that Bob Budiansky limited series, 4 issues from the early 80s. And also, they have another one. Speaking of Epic Collections, they have a good one that is the end of another series. They do the back end of the Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme series, where it was Dematis. Mark Buckingham did the art, and Baron Mordo came back and all that. Or Death of Mordo, maybe.
But they have a Sorcerer Supreme Omnibus Volume 1, and then they have the last Epic. So it's sort of like...
You know what's in between, don't you?
So you're gonna, like,
the Midnight Suns.
Omnibus, or, well,
like, no. What's in between is that Midnight Suns stuff with Mel Ruby and with the weird mask thing and all that.
Yeah.
That deserves its own weird Tim Vigil and Mel Ruby. What? Weird stuff. All right. Anyway.
And Daredevil's, like, every 6 months, it's like clockwork, isn't it? It's like, that's just going.
They're almost up to the Frank Miller stuff. The next one will probably be the write-up to the Frank Miller. This is at the end of the Colin stuff and Bob Brown, and it's starting to get a little meandering.
And we have 2 Spideys this month because of the movie, too.
Yeah.
Killer and Amazing, so that's kind of cool.
Speaking of Spider, not the movie, but the live action, the play. Andrew, did you see the play? How was it?
Yes, the Spidey Project. It was a musical, which I didn't know.
No way.
But believe it or not, I enjoyed it so much, I went on the internet and they have it for free, the whole soundtrack. So I've actually been listening to the Spidey Project cast recording. I mean, it wasn't the same. What I didn't know was they put this together in 2011, so it's been around for a long time. I had just never heard of it, so I don't know when. And it's on YouTube. They put a performance of it, so obviously I saw a different cast. But I really enjoyed, you know, with the musical, obviously it's the music I like. It was fun. The only thing that was weird was they have a lot of really silly humor, which is fine, but then it's hard to try and come back and have a kind of meaning to it. You know what I mean? If you put in the goofiest jokes, then I can't really be expected to have a lot of pathos for the more hardcore scene. But it's really fun. It sets him just in high school, and he is a loser, and then gets bit by the spider, and then gets the powers, and ends up with the girl at the end. And Flash is kind of a jerk to him and everything. Ends up with Gwen Stacy. I mean, there's a few changes and everything, but it's really fun. I like near the end when he's Spider-Man, he's on a date with Gwen, tutoring her. And every time he has a break and has to go fight a villain. But they do the scenes really quick. The villain starts monologuing, and he just beats him up and runs back to his date.
Nice.
But, yeah, if you check the Spidey Project, like I said, you can download the whole cast recording online for free. If you get a chance to see it, I enjoyed it. Like I said, it is kind of... There's a lot of silliness to it, but it's fun. I don't know. I like theater, so it worked out. It was a complete success. I enjoyed it, and, you know, like I said, I've been listening to the soundtrack, so that's a good endorsement.
Can you say the same about the Marvel Universe Live thing? Did that occur yet?
That did occur. I went opening night. The Staples Center was a bit of a train wreck as far as logistical operations, but I really enjoyed it, I can say.
Cool! I'm glad.
The soft bigotry of low expectations, again, rears its ugly head, but...
Well, did you see why I struggled when you were asking me, like, I don't know if it's a thing that's, like, just, like, for kids? It's like, well, it's definitely for kids, but I think there's enough there to appreciate of what they're trying to do, and some of the stunts and stuff are cool.
Well, the smart thing, and I don't know if how the different arenas are arranged, but the smart play, I would say, is do what I did, which is get a seat on the side.
Yes.
Because the tickets were mid-range, and I was in row two. So I was right up close to the action, and I paid about mid-price for the tickets. And I had a great seat. And you're not dead center, but who cares? Like, I'm closer than those people were, actually, because of how the arena was staged. They don't use the full stage area, so that was just empty space. So I was closer, and they cheat the action around. The other thing I didn't realize was there are scenes where they'll have upwards of, like, 15 guys on the stage doing all these stunts.
You can't watch them all.
Yeah, I thought it was more going to be like, oh, there's like, you know, two or three people. Kind of like a normal performance where you're focused on one. But it was really cool. You can't. You could watch it probably three or four times and get different things because there's stuff going on all over the stage at once.
True. Yeah, cool.
And I mean, except at the... We missed, because of the logistics thing, we missed the very beginning, but I was able to figure the plot out. So somehow.
There was a plot?
Through deduction, I was able to get it. Yeah, in the beginning, I thought it was going to, because it starts with Spider-Man taking on the villains, but then suddenly Cap and Black Widow show up on motorcycles. But it was a lot of, yeah, I was surprised. Good seats, fun time. It's about as long as you'd want it to be.
Yeah.
You know, they put a little intermission, and just when you're about, like, this needs to go. But yeah, I had no idea the cast was so huge. The one thing I will say, I went and bought The Program, which is an oversized lenticular cover thing. And it's not really a program in any sense of the word. It's like a poor man's Ohotmu for most of it.
Yes.
The actual program are only the last two or three pages.
We have the one from the last one from a few years ago. Yeah, yeah.
But it was $20, and they threw in, like, the special comic book.
Yeah.
And the guy made me laugh so hard. He's like, you know, this is a special collector's item.
Yeah.
Get it here. And I'm thinking, dude, you don't understand. There are tour dates for the next, literally through 2019, at least. This thing's going to go for, like, 3 to 4 years. Even if they only sell, like, $100 a show, this thing's going to sell, like, 300,000, like... The print run on this is way bigger than everything but, like, you know, the number one event first issue.
Civil War 2, right.
Yeah, I just love that. Like, it's a rare issue, and I'm like, yeah, because, you know, like I said, all you got to do is sell 100 of these a night, and you're going to have, you know, 500,000 at the end of this run. But still, you know, you got to get something. And I was like, I'll take it, and it was bagged and bored and everything.
Yeah.
So I have number two, Steve. I assume you have number one.
I do. The one from the number one was, I think, drawn by Tom Rainey. So, I mean, it was a good book.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll bust it out here and see. I looked at it, but I put it back in. It does feel a little light in the page count.
Well, there's not as many ads as...
We have Peter David and Christian Duss with Guru FX.
Right? So...
So, Peter David, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
Trying to bail out of that... Oh, look, we all get in trouble here and there. We're all having fun. He got some money from some people. It's all in good fun, people.
And sometimes you want other people to front you some cash, maybe.
Now, yeah. Andrew, at the first Marvel Live thing, they had a special wristband that kids could purchase and wear that if they held it up and it lit up at the right time and then all of the lights lit up all around the crowd throughout the arena, then, you know, somebody would break free of their bonds or Cyclops' optic blast would be recharged or whatever the heck it was that I forget what they did. But did they have some type of group participation at a cost?
Not that I could tell.
Okay, interesting. All right, they took that out.
Get a lot of time to cruise the. I looked at the merch afterwards because of all the.
But you would have known from the show because they would have been like, "Everybody, raise up your right hand with your thing on." But okay,
no, there was none of that. Unless cool. It was at the very, very beginning of the show.
No, it wouldn't be at the beginning. No.
I mean, there was make that you wait. Sort of thing, but it wasn't. If there was audience participation, I missed it. There's a point where they all have to focus their powers on Iron Man, but the characters on the stage are doing it.
Huh.
I mean, maybe in the audience they were doing it too, but all the characters kind of look, because it's the, you know, it's got the Avengers, it's got Doctor Strange, it has the Guardians of the Galaxy, it has Iron Fist, but not the cruddy TV show one that doesn't wear his uniform, but the proper one wearing the uniform.
Nice.
Oh, cool. You mean the one on the stage can actually wear a mask? Huh. Oh,
and the cool. Whole, you know, like the green and all that. Like,
that's cool.
That's odd.
Badass, because I was nervous at first.
Sure.
It's just going to be some guy with a beard and a shirt off. Like,
right.
I can see that at the beach. You know what I mean? But it was full on Danny Rand like we know and love him, because they have to go to Kowloon.
Ah, oh, no way!
Failing it, but there's not really.
This is like all coming full circle on this episode.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you saw more in that show than was on the actual show.
Exactly, that's what it felt like too. But yeah, so I mean, part of it was that kind of low. I wasn't going in expecting to have the greatest time, but I think having the good seats, being on the side, worked, because it was a moment where they all kind of cheated to us. So, like, the whole Avengers are all staring. Thor and all them are right on the, up on the thing, and the effects were good, and the fighting was fun. And as you mentioned, Steve, I didn't know there was so many things going on at once.
Yeah.
It's really kind of dizzying and fun. Like, you're just looking all over the place.
You had to choose who to watch during the fight, because everyone's doing their things, you know, all over the place.
Yeah, and lots of good bad guys, you know, Black Cat and the Rhino and Electro and
Green Wow, Cat. That's cool.
I mean, I'm kind of sad I didn't get the X-Men, but it was still a fun group. It was fun, and I'm going next time. I'll maybe have a report about Disney does every other year an expo called D23, and that's coming up. And they do Marvel has a big panel announcement. Like a few years ago, they brought a lot of the Avenger actors out. Mm. I'm not going to go to any of those things because you have to like camp out overnight to get into those, but I will go and check it out and walk the floor and all that. But the animation, Star Wars, Disney, Marvel, all in one.
Maybe they'll have some rare limited edition comic there for you too.
Yeah.
They do have a bunch of merch, but again, those lines are so crazy, I don't even bother. If it's you want it that bad, I tell people you're probably better off just getting it on eBay and paying, you know, yeah, you'll pay two or three times what it costs, but you'll save yourself, you know, 4 or 5, 6 hours of hassle and grief. And even then, you're not guaranteed to get it, you know, because it could sell out or you not get in or anything. All that stuff requires a kind of fortitude I just don't have anymore. Like, there's nothing I really want that I'm going to wait all them hours in and then risk not getting it anyways.
All right, and with that, let's call it an episode. Next up, episode 300 of Marvel Noise. Right, everyone, retire to your corners and read every issue 300 of Marvel that you can get your hands on, because we're going to cover them next time. Until Jessica Jones is revealed to be a literal instead of just the figurative clone of Jessica Drew. Make mine Marvel. Later.
Kiss you.